You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here to continue our draft countdown series. Tonight, doing the inside linebacker group, and joining me is my good friend Jason Smith of Huddle It Up Films. Jason, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. Draft season, baseball season, good times ahead. Weather's nice today. I'm looking at 64 degrees at 11 o'clock at night, so we've kind of made it, sir.
64 degrees. Great night for walking the dog, by the way. That's my responsibility, is the 2 a.m. and 9 p.m. walks. But the 2 a.m. walk is usually when I sometimes get 2 miles in. So that's my time.
You know what? I'm going to have to start calling you, man, with like 2 a.m. because that's my dog walking time, too. So we'll start making nightly calls at 2 a.m.
All right. Well, anyway, Jackson Holliday has just debuted, and not a personally great debut, a little bit of a Bermuda Triangle hit for the Red Sox first run, but the Ravens come back with some Colton Cowser and Jordan Westberg magic to take the game tonight. A great first game for Holliday anyway, to be there for a big comeback win from down 5-0. Let's talk about the Ravens situation, though, at inside linebacker coming into 24, because obviously the big news is Patrick Queen has moved on to the Steelers.
Yeah, I double-checked just to make sure I wasn't missing anything before we came on the show. Not about Patrick Queen. I remember that.
It actually sounded funny, though, the way you said that.
Yeah, sorry about that. I caught that, too. But no, Roquan Smith, Trenton Simpson, Chris Board, and Josh Ross. And that's it. I mean, unless you count Malik. He played a little off the ball when we went in some 4-3 looks, but mainly an edge player. So yeah. I'm looking at four linebackers, Ken. So I'm not in love with the class, just to, you know, say it nicely, but it wouldn't surprise me if with one of these nine picks, if we do pick nine times, if we do pick a someone in there that can challenge Josh Ross and Board for that backup linebacker spot.
Makes all kinds of sense that they would do that. And I know I've given Board a little extra of the owner's money. I believe, if I understand the contract correctly, his contract somehow counts as less than what it is. It's like the same deal that I think Phillips has with the Texans, that they pay him $2.6 million, but only counts 1.1 against the cap or something, because there's some player you can designate of that type. Anyway, something I really ought to ask a Brian McFarland about, the detail, what the situation is that makes him special in that regard. But Roquan Smith still remains as the leader. Excited about that. Now, the last time we talked, or one of the last times we talked, was about Trenton Simpson and I think we might have done an inside linebacker season review. And we were looking at Simpson going forward into 24. And I asked the question of you, which is more meaningful information at this point? The 26 snaps he had, I think it was, against the Steelers, where he played quite well, including about three splash plays in there, as I would account for them, and the or his entire career at Clemson before that. And I think your response at that time was Simpson's 26 snaps against the Steelers means more to you.
Well, the reason, and yes, and the reason for that is I had a really good feel for his career at Clemson. So there was really, it was above the shoulders. That's what I was looking for Trenton Simpson. And he had some snaps in garbage time along the way as well. But that last game in particular against the Steelers, I saw more discipline. I actually almost felt like I could see him thinking when he almost jumped into the wrong gap to try to make a play, to take one false step and say, wait a minute, I need to stay here and then be there for the cutback of the runner. So I saw some real conscious effort to where he's just not a physical specimen flying around making plays, but making mistakes to where he was conscious of his assignments and made a couple of splash plays along the way as well. So that, I mean, it's a very small sample, 26 snaps, but to me, it was important to see.
Yeah, it just in this class, and this is particularly the game cutups because it's not the kind of thing that makes highlights, but in this class, we see some linebacker who overrun from the backside run plays. Some I noticed in the just the cutups I looked at, which you know, you really don't like to see, but it happens. You know, players get excited. They go to the next gap too early, and the running back beats him to the backside of the play. But anyway, I guess the other question I wanted to talk to you about was Zach Orr. And, you know, he's taking over as the defensive coordinator, obviously an ex-committed nickel linebacker of the Dean Pease era. Now, what I mean by that, folks, and I know you know this, Jason, is that he was on the field on third down for the Ravens as the weak side linebacker during the Dean Pease era. He was the guy basically that kept Anthony Levine off the field for a couple of years in there. And then finally in 18 in Pease last, no, sorry, 17 in Pease last year as defensive coordinator, Levine went into more of a dime role. And then in 18, in the first Martindale year, he had the best year ever by a Ravens dime up to that point. And then Chuck Clark bettered it in 2019. So the question comes up in terms of Orr, do you see him staying with a committed nickel given they have Simpson and Smith? Or do you think that they'll try some version of the dime?
I mean, I think the only correct answer is I don't know, but I have a strong suspicion that he's going to give Trent Simpson every chance there is to stay in nickel, to try to dominate against the pass, and to try to hold up against the run. Just the same formula we saw last year with Mike McDonald. So I don't see him straying away from it too much. For instance, Kyle, which has nothing to do with it, but I hope Kyle's moved around and used in the same type of way. I hope we keep the same philosophy on defense because it sure did seem to work limiting the pass game. So I think Trent Simpson will be in there, but it's possible one of the guys that we're talking about tonight, or maybe somebody from the safety group, when you do your safety group, could end up being that dime linebacker by the end of the year.
We're very short on total bodies at the two positions right now. As you mentioned, there's really only four linebacker candidates currently in the Ravens system, which is very short for the 90-man roster. And if you look at the safety group, there's only, what, two guys signed right now, right?
That's only two. I was shocked, but yeah, there's only two.
Worley has not been re-signed yet, which I think is a certainty or a near certainty. They have not re-signed Lucy into the practice squad as of this moment, not that I've heard anyway. And so they're really short on safety talent. So who they're going to bring to camp? They probably have some guys they like, maybe some small school guys at safety in particular that they want to give a shot. So it could well be they need guys. But if they're going to play dime, they need to start accumulating some safeties, because if Hamilton is going to play a lot of nickel, which I think is a fair assumption at this point, they probably need to carry five on the roster, because it would be a 5-to-make-4 situation if you want to play dime with Hamilton in the slot and two deep splitting.
Right. And on this list tonight, there's one guy, and I keep looking at him. I think I'm going to have to move him up my draft board, but he's a hybrid player. He was used as a hybrid player. So I like the safety class a lot, actually. I think there's a lot of depth there and a lot of football-ready players, you know, guys that are ready to play. But we're going to talk about some guys on this list tonight that would also be candidates, because overall with this group, you know, not to jump the shark here, but I think that this class is a little more experienced. You can tell by the ages of the players, but also in the skill set of, you know, the hardest thing for a linebacker to transition into, which is the pass coverage. There are a number of guys here, they're pretty solid in coverage, which is a little unusual, as you know, from following the draft, hardest thing to project. So there's some guys that could step in and be a dime backer.
And specifically the L2, L3 coverage, the plays behind the play behind them, you know, dropping deep and making a play on the football. Yeah, I would agree. It's better than it has been the last few years when you just are saying there's no one here. You
know, right.
It's just
they take good deep drops in this class and we eyes forward, good eye balance. They not just behind them, Cam, but what's going on around them in case they have to rally. Quarterback spying with some of these guys, like I think they're a little bit – I think that's the bright spot of this class is they're a little bit ahead on the passing game, which, in my opinion, is what the Ravens really need to focus on here.
All right. I don't disagree that, in general, you want to be good against the pass with your linebacker group, and that's more valuable. But I did want to talk about the Ravens' need as a whole, and I think I would go and take the opposite direction on that. And here's my logic for this. I think they actually need a two-down thumper is the most important single addition to this group. If you look backwards, Board has played a little bit of third down football. Not, I don't think particularly well. I don't think they really want to go through that again for him being anything but a special teamer. But if he had to, he could be a third down might if they needed it. I don't know what this team does if Roquan gets hurt. There's nobody else on the team who's I wouldn't want Board in there on the first two downs at the mic. What they'd probably do is they'd probably go to the market. Even if they got the guy in this draft, they'd probably go to the market anyway and find somebody, just like they have with Josh Bynes, 11 times now, or whatever it's been.
Yes.
It's been twice, but yeah. Josh Bynes, they still got his phone number, I'm sure, and it's going to be used against underperforming linebackers for years. But I think that's really what they need, because if you're talking about injury backup, I don't trust anybody on the current roster. Ross Mora, I think, of a weak side coverage guy. I don't think Simpson would take the mic role. He would take it if they forced him to, but I don't think he's right for the mic role.
Agreed. And, you know, that was Delshon's job when they substituted. Mm-hmm. We talked about this at the end of the year show. I remember it was Simpson in for Queen, Delshon in for Roquan. And so losing Delshon Phillips is an underrated loss. So I can see both, I could see us bringing in both. Traditionally, the two down thumpers are easier to find. They just get lost in coverage. This draft, I think that there's a couple of guys that could profile as a thumper as well. So that to me too, Ken, that's the beauty of these lists is that, you know, not all receivers are the same. Not all tight ends are the same. And you've really got to take what the Ravens have on the roster now, what they have on the roster next year, the cost, and really like, okay, who are we playing in, you know, in nickel? Who are we playing in dime? Who are we playing in base? Where's the depth? So beauty's really in the eye of the beholder with these draft rankings. And that's part of the reason I love this and love talking to people about it, because none of us are right or wrong. Like it's a very fluid situation and, you know, everybody's got good points. So I'm interested to see who's on your list and compared to mine.
Let's talk about how you formulated your list, and mine is Raven centric. But I want to hear how you did yours in terms of ranking your players. How'd you do it?
Mine's Raven centric as well. And with the needs, you know, just getting back to that, I feel like that there is a decent chance that we will need, I don't want to say decent chance, but there's more of a chance that we will need a somebody that can come in for Simpson on coverage, just because of the unknown of that. So there might be a rookie. Now, Simpson man-to-man, much like Roquan, is excellent. But when you're talking about the awareness, knowing what's going on around you, behind you, as you say, that's something that Simpson is just yet to be tested on. So I was kind of prioritizing, you know, their coverage, also looking at their chops because as a run defender, but as you know, Ken, like the mic, the true mic is a dying breed. So guys that can do both, like, you know, guys higher up on my list can do both. They might not just be a great athlete for instance. So I kind of look at the more you can do with this group, the better.
Okay. And I'm in agreement. And particularly with your comments about pass coverage, always very valuable if you can find that in a linebacker, but I don't want to overpay for that. And if I'm being cheap, I say the easy answer is dime back. So you say you got a guy on your list who really more profiles a dime back. That's cool. Particularly if he's not going to come with a high draft capital tag on him. But I really like to get a I'd like to get more safeties on the team and have a safety be the third down will, and or be prepared for that to happen, depending on how Simpson starts to look off in the preseason.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, there's no guarantee that these safeties are used to playing will linebacker and knowing what's going on behind them either. So that's a projection too. Some of these guys are used to playing the deep half or playing, you know, off coverage and bunch formations and stuff like that. So there's no guarantee that you say, all right, well, I'm going to draft this safety and you have very limited tape of him playing off ball linebacker. So it's tough. Like we're going to have to double up either two safeties or a linebacker and a safety, something like that. Between those two positions, we could see two picks, three picks even, I would think.
Could be. So why don't we jump right into it and go to your number 10 guy. And what we've been just doing is kind of give us your thoughts. I understand that might be, you know, 90 seconds or more on each player to go through it. But that's fine. Take the amount of time you need. And then I'll kind of respond. And then I'll move on to my next one we've always done it before.
Absolutely. So my number 10 guy is out of Missouri. His name's Tyron Hopper. He's 23 years old. My combine note was just beastly looking. You're talking about a guy built like Trenton Simpson. Stood out among everybody in those tank tops that they got on or whatever it is. Quick player who could be utilized well for blitzing. I noticed he blitzed well, especially in the Georgia game. And he has the ability to to avoid blocks by bobbing and weaving his way around them. So we saw that a lot with Roquan. That's kind of his style, I would describe, of avoiding blocks, is to kind of give you the dead leg and then bob and weave around you. The issue with him is his ability to diagnose. I think his instincts are below average. His eyes get stuck. When the assignment is clear, he flies around. But if you lose some play design and things like that, can confuse him. A powerful player. He carries good weight. And I think he would be a core special teamer for you. And also, he would be one of those guys, Ken, that plays with the power to play a mic role, to take Absolutely. On these offensive linemen and really charge them and shrink the hole for the running back. So that's what I have on Hopper.
Okay. So Hopper's an interesting case and actually underscores a statistic that I've been looking for all linebackers. And so for me, and I'll get to the reasons why in a moment, he's a no for the Ravens under any circumstances. I you know, when I take him as a UDFA, okay, sure. Because really, I just trust the Ravens' judgment at that point, but he's not a guy I want to put draft capital into. By the way, do you have a seventh round grade on him? Where would you put him?
Yeah, these from 10 to 7 here. These are guys that, I mean, yeah, if we want to draft them in the seventh round or something, I'm fine with that. But these aren't guys that I would be taking with the first, you know, five rounds. The first, you know, we have basically five rounds worth of good picks is kind of how I say it. And then we got two sevenths. So none of these guys would be anybody we would be drafted until very late in the draft or undrafted guys.
Okay. All right. So my reasons for being a little negative on him. First of all, he's a short arm guy, but that's not the major reason. Does not have a bench and he's 23. Okay. So being short armed and 23, he should be strong. He certainly looks strong. If you look at the guy, he looks like a linebacker. He's built the way you'd expect him to be built. And didn't bench. It's probably a strength concern. His agent probably told him, you're not going to look that good on the bench. And if he'd done, you know, 25 reps on the bench, I still wouldn't be that excited about it, given his arm length. There's a big, whole bunch of variation, particularly on the defensive line. There's a bunch of guys who did 29 reps at 34 inches, and then there's guys who did 29 reps at 30 and a half or 31 inches. And it is not the same, folks. We right. had a power lifter on to explain that. I won't go into it again. Here's my problem. 3 years at Florida, two at Missouri. His 2023 season was absolutely awful statistically. And he played well in 2022, which was good. But in 2023, allowed 7.7 yards per target. 199 yak on 231 receiving yards. So it was a lot of yak of the total. That doesn't really forgive it. But here's the other problem is his missed tackles, which have always been a problem, 16.9% in his career, were 22.7% in 2023. I won't blame this on arms specifically, but it is easier to make tackles the longer your arms are. He's got 112 career stops, and this is the statistic. 43 missed tackles career. That's a ratio of 2.6 to 1. It's about the worst in the draft. of the players I looked at. I'm sure there's worse guys who are at 2-1 or 1.9-1 even if you looked at it. But the top guy in this draft is over 11-1. And that's what you want. I mean, you need stops of whatever sort. It can be pass stops, could be a pass deflected, could be a tackle. But he only had 112 of those in his career, despite a significant amount of playing time. Let me turn that off. Oriole game still playing from earlier. But only 43 missed tackles is a lot for that amount. 29-17, so less than a 2-1 ratio in 2023. You'll hear me mention this stat a lot tonight. To me, it's the strikeout to walk ratio for inside linebackers. If you want that one piece of information that tells you, is the guy really coming through on his opportunities, that's a good one. But that was why he's kind of a no for me. I agree with you in the sense that he certainly looks like a linebacker, and there's probably something that can be done with adequate coaching to get him back to the player he was in 2022. I just don't know if that's enough.
Yeah, I would say the one thing I'd push back is I'm not worried about how much he could bench. His play strength is there. I think it's one of the best in the class. When he hits you, you know it. And you can tell by his build, 6'2", 231. It's just, I mean, he plays like a guy that's almost too big, too heavy, almost like an edge, you know? Like, for the same reasons Malik couldn't stick it inside linebacker, he's just a little too big and not agile enough. That's how I would describe Hopper. So, yeah. But, yeah, missed tackles, always never good. Never good.
All right, let me move on to my number 10 guy, if that's okay. It's Trevin Wallace of Kentucky. Same kind of 7 UDFA is where I have this guy right now. Let me get down to my notes on him here. So I'm not talking about somebody else. Easy to run in and talk about a different guy that you remember. At least I'm finding it to be that way. Nice 4.51 speed, great broad invert. And here's the big thing about Trevin Wallace. He's had some on-field non-performing issues, but he's just turned 21. So that's one of the big things that inside linebacker in particular have a wide range of age. There's Wallace, who just turned 21. There's people all the way up to age 24 who are, you know, still looking for work at this point, just entering the draft. Everything about his size, athleticism, and age profile is good at 6'1", 237, and 32 5/8 arms. 8.5 yards per target, and he was picked on almost 10% of the coverage snaps, which is not good. I don't think you pick up on that particular metric. You can certainly pick up that there's a deficiency from watching him, that he's not perfect in terms of coverage. But I think that the metric is actually important in this case for me to overcome my own evaluator bias with regard to that. His missed tackle rate was decent this year at 11.5%. By the way, the median missed tackle rate for inside linebackers, 13.5% in 2023. Had 33 stops and 10 missed tackles. That's 3.3, which is kind of the meh level. A lot of linebackers are in the threes. In the high threes, that's still pretty good. You're in the low threes, that's trending towards not so good. But he was at 3.3 with his age, I definitely would have to project growth to be excited about him as a draft pick here. Run defense, as I saw it, remains a work in progress. A lot of trouble getting off blocks, despite reasonable recognition. So you think he'd do some things to be able to beat guards more easily. But he gets kind of pushed around more than I would expect for that. I think, you know, moving from Mike to Will and playing more there, I think he should improve as a trail player at the NFL level. So maybe that's a place to look for improvement, like we got from Patrick Queen moving there and playing next to Roquan. Don't think he's a three down player, despite the speed right now, which limits his draft stock. That might actually be good for the Ravens, who might actually be able to turn him into a three down player. Because you look at him, he's got 4.51 speed, and maybe he's a guy who can stay on the field once he learns to do it. I think he's probably a year away from being a starter anyway, barring an injury and an emergency. I think he's a 7 UDFA for me. So right at the end of my list there is Trevin Wallace.
There you go. So I think he's a Will all the way. And the Patrick Queen, first couple of years, Patrick Queen, I think is a apt description of him. And I'm actually higher on him than you can. He's number 6 on my list. He's somebody I would look at even starting in the 5th round, number 101 overall on my big board. And just for the playmaking, I mean, I agree with pretty much everything you said. The less he thinks at this point, the better as a 21-year-old. But it's not difficult to envision him making impact and earning them those will snaps as a pro. Gap shooter, blitzer, playmaker, energy giver. 4.51 I thought was about right, but it wouldn't have surprised me if he ran into 4.4s. That's kind of the way he looked. You can see him wrangling linebacker, using that length. So he doesn't always have to, he doesn't have to shoulder people. He can tackle the right way and get them down. But he lacks instincts to the points where teams will need a veteran Mike to clean up his mistakes. That's verbatim from my report. He's going to need a veteran Mike next to him. And it's a double whammy because his eyes can deceive him and he's too aggressive at times. So like we saw with Queen early in his career, running himself out of plays unnecessarily, that's what you get from Trevin Wallace. So he's trusting himself when he should just take a deep breath and see it first before he shoots. Sometimes it looks like he tries to make the perfect play and he'll give up ground taking on blocks. Like instead of trying to avoid a block, he just thinks he can kind of go through it or beat him to the spot and he does it. So I love the traits. I would say let him play special teams and learn how to play defense more under control. 21 years old, like you said, that's part of the reason I like him in an old class. I would say, look, this kid's going to make mistakes. He's going to need a year. You got Roquan Smith on your roster. I kind of like him. I like his physical makeup, and you know, it's just above the shoulders with him, much like Trenton Simpson. So he's the same type of player.
All right. Well, very good. I'm glad we have some of these differences showing up early. I imagine we have a lot of the same top four or five guys. But move on. Who's your number nine guy?
My number nine guy, this is a guy I really haven't gotten a great feel for, and I want to see what you have for his missed tackle rates because, man, he has a natural feel for the position. It's Steel Chambers out of Ohio State, old player, 24 years old, a short arm guy, but, man, he looks so in control of everything he's doing. Natural feel for the position in all phases, well ahead in the coverage aspect. Plus feel for concepts and zone, both discipline and anticipatory in the run game. And that's a skill. Sometimes people are just too patient. Sometimes people are like the guy we talked about Wallace before, too anticipatory. He has a really good feel for that. And I think his plus physical trait is his body control, Ken. So it's really noticeable in how he can slip blocks, get skinny through creases. His limitations are athletic ones. He doesn't have the knockback power. Speed looks just okay, even when you factor in his anticipation. I wouldn't think he's a fast player, didn't run the 40. But he's just a solid veteran-looking guy that if he had to play snaps, you know, as soon as this year, I don't think he would, you know, kill us in the pass game. So I put him on the list, number nine, another guy I'd be looking at later on, you know, seventh round maybe, if we had a sixth-round pick, that kind of thing.
Okay, Chambers is solidly in the UDFA category for me, so I have him off my list here. I actually don't have him on my honorable mention list at all, but I did look at him, and he's very tiny for an NFL inside linebacker. The one thing, and I think this relates to a point you made here about being able to slip blocks, is he has pretty good lateral movement for the inside linebackers in this draft. Not a lot, you know, there's two drills that almost no linebackers run anymore, and, you know, people pick and choose their drill. You can pretty much assume they're going to be bad at a drill that they don't do. You can pretty much assume that. But a 4.23 shuttle is actually a very impressive number. And there weren't a lot of guys who did it this year, but his number was pretty good. Real short arm guy at 30.5 inches. It took a list look because it's what I had in terms of the impressive cut up that's out there from the Georgia 2022 semifinal. I don't know if you probably looked at that one too. But looked like he had really good pursuit from sideline to sideline. There were definitely instances where he's caught up in the wash versus NFL players. And in fact, that was a common thing I looked at, was the guard really took care of a lot of these players that I looked at in cut-ups. You get highlights, you're always getting the plays they slip by. If you look at the every play from a game, a cut-up is what I'm talking about, then you see, you know, exactly what the guards are doing to him. But I thought he did actually fight past the right guard, on a play where he was blocked into the back of a center, and it got a sack on the play. And it almost looked like a double team, but it wasn't. It was the center's back, and the right guard was blocking him into it. It was kind of a weird situation, but he fought out of it and got a what I would call a cleanup sack. Interception on a pass between L2 and L3, love that. If you know how I talk about linebackers, you know how much I love any kind of happening between L2 and L3 on a pass. Found the ball carrier, I thought, very well coming downhill. Got stiff-armed in the open field by number six. I think that's a running back, but I actually didn't check to make sure it wasn't a wide receiver on the play. And he was pancaked by number four, who I believe is a running back, and I don't know who that is for Georgia in 22. But anyway, that didn't look so good. Very poor at shedding blocks, I would say. It's a length issue and a size issue with him, despite having pretty good recognition here. This is the statistic you're asking for, 36 stops and 10 missed tackles. Had 16 stops in coverage. That's really good. So I think he brings more to the field probably as a pass defender at this point, even though he probably is a little bit of a tweener. You wouldn't necessarily know whether he's going to be a good run defender or a good pass defender, but probably right now he's probably a little bit better pass defender. 6.2 yards per target is very good, an 81 opposition passer rating. Non-factor as a pass rusher. So he did not do it a whole year, but he only had two pressure events in 38 pass rush opportunities as a senior, significantly more impactful in 22. But what that means is they're probably relying on his coverage skills more by reducing his pass rush volume. If you think about Patrick Queen's relationship to Roquan, Roquan was asked to do a lot more in terms of coverage because that was where Patrick Queen was weaker. And so they would send Queen on more blitzes. If you're sent less, it's an indication you're a pretty decent coverage player. So I think he's an okay UDFA. I don't think he really met their what I consider to be the larger need of a two-down thumper. He could probably replace Simpson in the case of an injury and give you that nice kind of a balanced Will look. And I actually didn't check to see if he had played exclusively Mike or Will or a mix of both.
He played Will because his counterpart in the draft, Tommy Eichenberg.
Oh, of course.
Is yes. There Mike? But yeah, Ken, it's funny. See, this is what I love about the draft because, our scouting reports on him are pretty much the same. Physically, we're seeing the same guy, not an NFL athlete in terms of size or pure speed, but a heck of a football player with good body control, good in coverage. He's just small. Mm-hmm. And, to me, again, looking for that dimebacker, that third down sub type guy, that's why he's on my list as far as someone that I'd be willing to draft in that seventh round. If he doesn't work out and if it's the NFL's just too big for him, then, you can let him go and not feel the pressure of trying to keep a guy like this.
Yeah.
But I would say, special teams, a guy who knows, an overachiever of such, I think that he would be good even for a 24-year-old. To have under contract for 4 years. He'll be 24 this year. So all the ages I say is how old they'll be in 2024. Even for an older player, what I'm saying is you get him from age 24 to 28. Maybe he's a dime backer, a core special teamer, a Chris Board type. Maybe he's your new Chris Board type player. So, it's always interesting how we see a lot of the same things. And that game you watched pretty much described what I saw from him when the games I watched, just good body control. Somebody bodies up on him, he's in trouble. You know what I mean? But I think he was a very good at avoiding blocks in the games that I watched. Like he saw it coming, his vision was good. So, that's who I had at number nine, Chambers.
You worry about him being a one contract player, or you don't worry about it if he's a 7/UDFA?
Yeah. I guess everybody's different in that, but I worry a lot about age when it's premium positions and picks that are in the first 2 days. So we're going to draft a left tackle of the future. I care a lot more about what his tape looks like if he's 20 or if he's 22 or 23. You always take the younger player because they have room to grow. But we're talking about backup linebacker profile. I really don't care if he's 22 or 24 or 20. He's going to be a backup and he'll be lucky to make 4 years in the NFL, and anything you can get out of him would be great.
Yeah, fair enough. Move on to my number nine guy, I guess, then, and that's Edifon Ulufosio of Washington. Goes by Eddie, as I understand it. By the way, this is a player Josh Reed is really high on, and I like them too. I fell in love with them as soon as I watched the cutup. I did. He's a let me get down to the notes on it. But he came from Anchorage, and so Josh, who works there and is always very intimately involved with the families of any prospect. Last year it was Salah. Who came from there is got a lot of interesting things to say about him. All right, let me get down to the notes about him here really quickly. 6'1", 236. He's a big guy, 32.875, 32 7/8, 456.40, outstanding jumps. He did turn 24 in January, so he's one of the older ILBs in the entire draft. In fact, I don't think there's anyone who turned 20, who turns 25 this year, but I might be wrong about that. There might be one guy. He's had a long route to get to play at Washington. He was a walk-on, tore his bicep in 21, tore an ACL in 22. So right there, injury red flags are up on this guy. Both a run and underneath pass recognition are very good. Meaning as long as that play's in front of him, he's fine. I thought he did extremely good not letting the running back get away on some passes. After watching Queen do that for 4 years, or for most of 4 years, let me be fair about it, that's something I really am happy to see. You know, in a fairly long arm linebacker who can run and not let the running back get away from him. His missed tackle rate slightly above average for an inside linebacker at 11.4%, 40 stops and 12 missed tackles. So he's okay at 3.33 to 1. You'd expect improvement to come there, probably with better coaching, a little more actual time on the field. His coverage results are very good. At 35 targets for 151 yards, that's 4.3 yards per target, which is about the best. In fact, I believe it is the best of all the draft consideration players, let's call it. There's probably other linebackers. There might be one who is better than 4.3 yards per target. That's an outstanding number. Opposition passer rating of 60.5. He allowed a 48-yard play in the opener and then only allowed two plays over 10 yards the whole rest of the season. Most everything just right in front of him, taking people down for stops. I understand why the age and injury history will have a lot of teams black dot him, but I think he's a great UDFA or seventh round option for the Ravens. He'd be somebody that I would be very excited if his name is called on day three for the Ravens.
Okay, Ken, so here's your trivia question. What does Ulofosio mean?
Oh, I have no idea. What does it mean?
Well, I learned at the during the combine coverage that his name translates to "not afraid of war." So go ahead and it's a good football nugget right there. But yes, his parents were immigrants from Nigeria. Moved to Alaska. He did not make my list for a couple of reasons. The injuries in 2021 and 22 were one thing, but I didn't like his change of direction. I didn't think it was smooth. And I wrote down, and I don't usually like to put my negative notes out there, but his angles in tackling are poor, and aggressive angles put him behind the eight ball. So I saw tackling issues. That was my main thing on why. But a good looking athlete. If he were a UDFA, I'd be very, very happy about it. Sixth year player at a Power 5 school. So I figured his angles and instincts would be much better for a player of that age, which kind of scares me. Like if you're 24 or whatever he is, a 60-year player, and you're taking bad angles to the football, is that really going to improve when the players are faster? So he kind of scares me a little bit, but I love his style. I like watching him play. That would be I think he would be a fan favorite if he ended up working his way onto the Ravens roster and onto the field. People would love his style. Not afraid of war, Ken.
Be very exciting if we hear his name or see it on the UDFA list when that comes out, because it could be a priority there. Okay, that's my number nine guy. Who's your number eight guy?
This is where I get to a guy that reminds me of Malik Harrison, Maris Leofo of Notre Dame. Not sure if he made your list or not. I've seen him all over the place. By the way, Ken, now that I've been finished my evaluations for a couple of weeks, I've been poking my head out and seeing where other people are ranking these guys. So that way, like if I have somebody way low or not on my radar, or who the heck is this guy, I can go and study up. But Maris Leofo, Notre Dame, I think he's going to be a great special teams player, number one. Really long arms, and it shows up in the games. I like to guess what the measurements are before they come out. And, I had in my notes, this guy plays really long, like long arm, Kyle Hamilton, like long.
Exactly.
Of course, he's not like as, at 6'2", 234, he's not as skinny as Kyle, as flexible maybe as Kyle, but he's got those kind of arms. A bit of Malik Harrison to his game. So Ravens fans will understand that. I love his ability to play with power. Can he stick at linebacker because of his change of directions? I'm not sure. But he had some reps on the edge in the games I watched, and he should make a roster. The type of player that can play on the strong side. If it was a 4-3 old school defense where you're playing in base personnel all game long, he would be your Sam. He would be your prototypical Sam linebacker in a 4-3. So there's a lot to like about his game. And again, he's a guy starting him round. Maybe you're starting him round five. Maybe I'll give a little bit on this one, Ken, and say I'm not waiting for round seven. The linebackers are dried up. I like this guy. It's round five. Let's take the 23-year-old from Notre Dame.
All right. Round five is exactly where I like him, which means he's higher on my board. He is number five for me. I think the pronunciation is Leofau, but you know, we watch a fair amount of Notre Dame, but it could be they're misdoing it. 4'6", 4'40", turned 23 in February. He's in the middle of the age range of this group. So he's not 24 like some of the better guys. But he sheds blocks well with those long arms, natural downhill style. Definitely looks like a mix between Troy Polamalu with the hair and Kyle Hamilton with the arms. No doubt about it. 10 run stops in 275 run snaps. 3.6% is terrible. Okay. So that's the real downside of him. But he does a lot of other things better in terms of coverage. And he had like 22 stops with 10 missed tackles in 23. Yes, that's his total is 22 stops with 10 missed tackles, which is a very poor ratio of 2.2-1 overall. So I'm taking him much more for a traits guy. Where he has been effective is in coverage, where he just allowed 5.6 yards per target. I think they move him all over the place, which I guess is appropriate for what Notre Dame had in terms of assets. They're not Michigan. They're not Ohio State in terms of having great linebackers or great players at every position. They have some stars on defense, but they moved him all over, a lot like the Ravens would move Kyle Hamilton or Troy Polamalu would get moved all over the field to try and make plays. Hit 25 pressures and 129 snaps as a pass rusher. That was unimpressive. I'll talk about the cut up some that I watched in terms of what I saw there. Dropped to cover only 59.7% of pass snaps. So what that's telling me is they don't trust him to cover that much, but when he did cover, he was quite effective. So interesting because the look of him, the speed is good enough probably to handle some tight ends. But I did see some things in the Louisville game from 23 that were not particularly good. Yeah. So you saw that too.
He's heavy footed. I think that leads to a lot of his problems, but the way they asked him to line up everywhere stood out to me. And when I see that, Ken, that tells me that they trust him. That tells me he's got some smarts upstairs. And it's sometimes, you know, there's players like that, their stats, their advanced stats, or even basic stats like missed tackles can be a little bit misleading because you're playing out of position. And in the NFL, it's a very specialized league. You're going to be playing in this package and your responsibility is X, Y, and Z. And that's all we really want you to concentrate on, especially as a rookie. So I really liked his versatility. I think he's like it's 40 at 4.64. I think that's accurate. And he packs a punch when he hits you. But I like his change of direction. He's a little bit of a clunky mover. So I'm not sure with like some of these shiftier running backs, if he's going to be able to stick as a inside linebacker or if like Malik, like I said, his game kind of reminds me of Malik's a little bit. If you would put him on an NFL field where maybe he's not quite athletic enough to stay at Mike, but you can move around, play some edge, maybe even, you know, use him at Mike. Maybe he has an upside there, special teams player. I think there's a lot of things to like about him, Ken. And he kind of reminds me of he has the look of an NFL player. And I'm not talking about the hair or anything. I'm just talking about the body type. And he looks like an NFL player to me.
Okay. I got a few more things to say about him, but that's
sure. Go ahead.
I would agree with that. The Louisville game 23 was an interesting one because it was his worst game of the year for PFF. Okay. So they said, you know, his grade was the lowest he'd had the entire season in the 40s. And there certainly were some problems. Got caught in the wash by guards a lot, even by traffic a lot, I'll say, that got to level two. That's even not a block on him. But also, he was a step slow, really, against the running backs running off tackle. And so they had a running back, a little Rendo, gashed him for about 12 or 15 yards, where you could say he took a bad angle, but honestly, he was just a step slow getting to the play. And then Louisville Their last two touchdowns they scored were scored both on similar off-tackle runs by Jordan, where he was a step slow getting the play. Right. So that was unfortunate to see that. He did make an outstanding ankle tackle on a screen. He had some good underneath coverage. He had one really bad misread. Excuse me.
It's okay. Yeah, I was going to add to that while you recover there. Sifting through the trash is more problematic, was one of my notes. When the play's coming at him, he's more effective. Sifting through trash, getting through the bodies, again, those feet and that body control, I don't think that that's a strength of his.
Yeah. I've seen him ranked higher than this, but I think he would be an overdraft for the Ravens in round four. I do think he more fits the Mike need, and I it'd be interesting. I think, you know, they got good linebacker coaching in Baltimore. We always have had that. It'd be nice to see somebody like Orr work with him on both elements, on the coverage element and on the recognition elements. Obviously, he'd be probably playing next to Roquan unless it's an injury situation where I think if he came on this team right now, I think he'd be the obvious Mike behind Roquan. I don't think he'd play Will. So he's interesting from that perspective to me.
Me too, because Ken, they're all Wills coming out. This guy's a Mike. This guy's a Mike. And most of the players we're going to name tonight, most of the players have come out in the last 3 years. It's like, where are the Mike linebackers, Ken? They don't exist. They're all run and chase players. Running chase is actually Leo. Would you say Leo Fo or Leo Fowl?
Leo Fowl.
Leo Fowl's run and chase is Leo Fowl's weakness. Mm-hmm. He's a take on block, butt kicking kind of guy. So if you're saying, hey, we don't really see many of these guys anymore in the college game, maybe he's somebody that you have a little higher on your list. So I could see it. But yeah, I have him at number 8.
Okay. Well, very good. My number 8 guy, we'll move on right now, is Michael Barrett of Michigan. I have a 6/7 round grade on him, and that's a Ravens grade. I know I say this every show, and I don't mean to be condescending with this comment, but I'm creating a value grade. Where does this player have value to the Ravens? The Ravens want value picks. They want BPA type picks. Those my value position is probably going to be a round lower than where other people think he's going to be drafted. So other people think he's going to be drafted in the 4th or 5th round. I say the 5th or 6th round is a value position. That's what I want them to do. If Michael Barrett's not available, there's a lot of other players to choose from who will be value picks at that point. Michael Barrett, if you look at him on a football field, he looks absolutely minuscule, particularly compared to those other Michigan players. Looks like a smallish, strong safety playing at 5'11", 233. Now, he is built very thoroughly from top to bottom. He's a tiny guy at 5'11", 32 1/8-inch arms. He'll be 25 this December, so he's the guy who's the oldest in this draft, I believe. Obviously, the size and length are a big issue. He lined up some, and in particular, this was true in the red zone for Michigan, that he was lining up far off ball, more like a safety. And he reminds you of a safety to start with, or you can even think of it as maybe a deep slot corner on those plays, but it wasn't some, you know, 8-9 yard line the other team was on where I was really noticing this happening. More than any other player at linebacker in this draft, and we're projecting them all as core special teams players. Even Leah Fowl is a Mike and a little heavy-footed. He's going to play special teams. That's what he'll do initially. Barrett has a special teams highlight reel. He had a great dive play on a punt where he ran it for, 10, 15 yards to get a first down. He had a couple of kickoff returns where he plays in the wedge, and he returned them. Didn't eschew the fair catch, on a couple of different situations, and made a really nice, like, the vision of a running back or even a return guy on the play. I was very impressed by that. I mean, he'd probably become a real fan favorite just for what he did on special teams. And then you'd hope he got a linebacker. You'd root for the guy at a high level. But there are real questions about whether or not he's big enough to play at the NFL level. He's a guy, I think, if you want a guy who maybe looks a little bit like a dime back and he could come in, he could definitely handle the downhill responsibilities of being a third down linebacker. Unfortunately, I don't think he's particularly great at that. He could rush the passer okay, and he could probably give you some coverage, certainly on downhill plays to stop people if the quarterback throws short of the sticks. It's between level 2 and level 3 where he'd give you a little bit more problem. nice drive-through tackler. You and I have talked about that before in the past, the twisters versus the drive-through guys. I think he's a drive-through guy. Does not shed blocks well. That's obviously going to be one of the questions in the NFL level. What else do I got here? Did a pretty good job beating single running back blitzes. And part of it is his small size actually helps him there. So he doesn't get stood up by the leverage of a running back, or running backs have a hard time going low on him, or don't think to go low on him because he's kind of smallish. And he has a good contact balance running right through a guy, or even standing him up because of the leverage gain he can get off of a, you know, even a typically sized running back who tries to meet him a few yards in front of the quarterback. 35 stops and 9 missed tackles is solid, almost 4-1. So I don't have a problem with that. And he allowed 5.2 yards per target in coverage. Although I would say he does not look like a L2, L3 guy to me. He looks more like a downhill coverage guy.
Right. So I saw him play a lot, like on the overhang, Ken. So not even Will, but he's playing overhang. Yeah. He did not make my list. I'm sorry. He did not make my list. But he does have strengths. I think that his hit speed or his hit power is excellent. And like you alluded to, his leverage, I mean, I think he could do a better job of taking on blocks, because even for as short and squatty as he is, his arms are 32 1/8. I mean, so it's not like he's short armed for a linebacker. He's actually got very long arms for his size. That's a guy you would expect to, 5'11", you expect 30-inch arms.
Change, yeah.
31, yeah, right, something like that. But he's a tweener to me. Like, I don't think his vision in the pile among the trees is very good. And I think that him being 5'11 is a good example of that. Ran a 4.7 at his pro day. I think that that's pretty indicative of his play speed. So you're looking at by the way, I thought that he got caught flat footed in coverage a lot, a little bit slow to diagnose, 25 years old. So I don't really see a place for him. He didn't make my list because of that. I think that he's got good hit power, and I had on the notes 634 career special team snaps. 634, Ken.
Nice number.
That's impressive. That's a guy who earned his scholarship right there. That's a lot of covering kicks. That's a lot of hitting. That's a lot of physical play. So I have a lot of respect for him. If we drafted him, I think he could make an impact, like a confident. He would be one of our better special teams players. Maybe that comes into play on the kickoff coverage and a guy that can get himself active. But, for me, it was a no-go, but I give him a lot of credit. Another guy, it's kind of fun watching him play. I just wish he were a little bit taller. He'd be a better baller.
There you go. Okay, I'll tell you what, we're going to do your number 7 guy, and then we found that that's about the place where if we break it, we have an equal number of players in the first half and the second half. So who's your number 7 guy?
Okay, Ken, this is the guy that I'm thinking about scooting up my list. He's a hybrid kid, and then I found out recently he is from Broward County as well, which, of course, the Ravens have their thing for their Florida players. He's only 21 years old, too, Ken. He's got offensive linemen level arms. He is a freaky looking athlete, and I'm not talking about, hey, he runs a 4.340. His name's James Williams out of Miami. He's listed as a safety on most people's lists. I'm putting him here with the linebackers. He is a positionless play. He moved around a lot on that Miami defense. Like, I would think, I don't know their defense really, really well, but I would think that his position was like Joker or Star or something like that. He was moved around more than Leo Fowl. I think he plays faster than this testing. I think he played faster than a 4.65. He has the length and the quick trigger to finish plays. Good idea of how to take on blocks and to get position. I would like to see him shed a little bit better. I think he can improve on that as a 21-year-old. And I'm seeing some hesitation when he's playing zone, picking up his assignments and what's going on around him. But his man coverage versus tight end is what you want. He's a guy that if he's playing these big, tall, long tight ends, he's got the speed and the skills to cover them. Just a side note, his play demeanor is fun. He can close on pass catchers before they turn for yak. So if he's covering these little hooks and curls, when he sees it, he's got a quick trigger. He's long. He's coming 6'4", 231. So James Williams out of Miami, I have him number 108 on my board. This is when it starts getting to the guys that I like and would take in the fifth round. Maybe even that second, fourth round pick, probably that would be a stretch. I would say fifth round, Ken. Fifth round, looking at him, if we found fifth or sixth, but he is a positionless athlete. And I could see that, like, one of those guys, Ken, where like Isaiah Thomas or Isaiah Simmons goes to Arizona and gets lost, career busts out. If he goes to a team that doesn't know how to use him, I could see him busting out of the league. If he goes to a team like the Ravens with a specific plan for him, put him in a position to succeed, I think he could be an excellent player.
Okay, this is interesting. Now, I did not study him. I'm looking at some other scouting reports on him, and I'm mostly looking at the PFF data on him here. I'll say, here's the thing that would bother me. First of all, the age I'm thrilled about, so I'd be cool on that. 13 missed tackles and only 15 stops on the year. So he's almost a one-to-one guy. It's the worst ratio I've seen in the draft here so far. Now, it's great. He's a long arm guy as well, you said?
Yeah, he's coming off. Yeah, dude, his arms are 33 and 5/8.
That's solid.
Yep. And he's shooting off the edge a lot. Like I said, he's not like a lot of his tackles or tackle attempts are places where he's not supposed to be. He is that freestyling guy that they try to play make. So you're talking about some of these, you know, he's diving at guys in the backfield, that kind of thing. Like, you'll really like him. I'm interested to see you study him, watch a couple of cut-ups, watch a couple of games, and come back to me on this. Because he was used a lot like a guy Leofo, and he's younger.
Okay, well it's certainly somebody I'd be interested to look at. Shoot me a link to a cut up of him. That's what I really want to see.
Okay, body control, by the way, Ken, like a Kyle Hamilton, again. So like if 4.65, 40 is fine. That's good, but you're talking about that like Cam Hart out of Notre Dame, like that just excellent body control, length. And he's fought through a lot of adversity in his life, which is a side story. A lot of people don't care about that, but like, believe me, he wants to make it. The hunger of the game is there, and it shows in his play demeanor. Guys rally around him. Wore Ed Reed's number 20. So, I mean, I think that there's a little something to this kid. And every time I look at him on my list, I want to scoot him up.
All right. Well, very cool. I'll be looking forward to seeing that tape. Strong safety / free safety is where PFF lists him for position, but yes, in the Florida media, in the Miami media guide, it might say something completely different, like star or joker.
Yeah,
he
would be our Will, right? He would be our. I would look at him as a Will linebacker, and maybe somebody that you would want to play at strong safety when Kyle's in the slot, like a combination type player. But it's just his athletics are tantalizing. And he's still young, and you can tell he's still figuring stuff out. But when he sees those hooks and curls and closes on them, you get an idea of like, wow, that's an NFL play right there.
Definitely a deep cut, Jason. Really appreciate it. A trivia question for the group here. We'll let you think about it for a second. But what – and it'll be – the answer will be on the second show. That's how we'll tease this.
Do it, dude. You should do that every time.
But what Ravens draft pick had the college position of stud? Okay, and I bet you remember, Jason, but we'll get to it in the second part. Really appreciate you coming on and doing this. Great stuff. Always a lot of fun to talk football with you. We've already had a fair number of differences here in terms of players on the list, off the board, or on the list and much higher. It's always great to have some difference of opinion on this show. When you're with Crawford on the cornerbacks, we must have been the same from like 6-1 down.
That's what you get when quarterbacks especially, like, because there's only so many of them. But in a class like this, like, I expect us to have the first 4, 5, 6, like you're saying, the same.
Yeah.
After that, it's just a bunch of guys, man. You know what I mean? It's a bunch of guys. Who catches your eye? What do you see from the Ravens? Who's got the upside? Who can hang in the league? So I've enjoyed it. You know, like, I'm going to go back and listen to this and look at my guy, Not Afraid of War, again. And see how that works out. So thank you for having me, Ken. I look forward to part 2.
Always a pleasure. Jason, where can folks find your work online?
Sure. At Huddle It Up Films on Twitter, X, and then Huddle It Up Films on YouTube. I'm going to plug on YouTube just a second. I have the highlights, which are more play compilations of every single Raven from last year. So as you're bored, I actually did a cut up of Josh Jones, Ken, something I'm going to try to get you to look at. It was his week 1 performance against us when he played for the Texans.
A lot of guard, right?
at left guard. Yep. He was an emergency starter that day. Remember, they had all those injuries that week. Mm-hmm. So Josh Jones versus Madubuike, you know, Josh Jones versus Travis Jones and Michael Pierce. Spoiler, I kind of like him at left guard. He looked impressive for the circumstances. And but yeah, on the channel, you can find a bunch of stuff to keep you busy. Faalele and Ben Cleveland are two guys that you might want to take a look at, guys that are going to be we're going to be counting on for possibly bigger roles this year. So check me out on YouTube, guys.
All right. Highly recommend Jason's work. Always a great guest on this show. Whenever I have him on, we'll do so. I'm sure we'll do a two-player show later this year. And we'll, of course, do the second half of this show in a few minutes, where you get to learn who was the stud in college. Other folks out there, if you'd like me on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. I would love to have you on for any sort of content that you're passionate about between now and the start of camp, where it gets more tight to do shows. It's still possible, but it's more tight. And one of the things we're looking for, if you don't really have a topic that you want to present or talk about, or an analytics thing or anything you're passionate about in terms of scheme or roster building, is to do a recollections episode, which is a historical series we're doing. Pick a Raven from the past that's not in the Ravens pantheon of stars. And let's talk about him in a 15 to 20 minute episodes of shorter content to make this a little bit more accessible to a larger group who really look at time and say, I can't afford to spend 30 minutes on something. And would really appreciate doing that with folks who want to do it. Jason, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.